So taking a look at that, you'd have a potential really total of 24 trucks per day between 1 a.m. and 6 p.m., or the equivalent of 1.42 trucks an hour. Or if you want to reverse that, you can go about one truck every 40 minutes or 42 minutes. Just to give you an idea as a what you could see if this was not a what Strauss is doing, but you if you took a typical food service distribution center of 150,000 square feet, you would see 65 trucks coming in from 1 a.m. to 6 a.m. or outbound. On that, that's 13 trucks an hour. And then to refill that facility, you'd see 45 inbound trucks from 6 a.m. to 3 p.m., or 10 trucks per hour. That's an average over that time of 8 trucks per hour, almost 5.5 times what Strauss has. We're just trying to throw that in as a comparison to understand that really the amount of truck traffic that you're going to see from Strauss is very, very small in the overall time span.
Right. That helps me understand what you have the distribution on here. So it's 1.42 trucks coming in per hour.
Correct.
Is what you're saying. So just for Alderman Nelson's knowledge, I can have one truck going up at the Sam's Club loading dock, and my phone rings because the condos are right there. And I don't know what the difference in the distance is, but that might be something. Is there any way to turn off those beepers?
Because that's actually a safety requirement.
Any way to turn them down?
I believe, in all honesty, that's an OSHA requirement that sets the decibel level of the beepers for trucks backing up.
I just don't think that will be very conducive to the residential is my concern, because I know I deal with it.
But there's also another thing you want to consider. Highway 36 alone, on average, per the DOT, sees 15,000 vehicles per day on that road, right, all day long. I mean, so you're seeing that 15,000 vehicles. Now, granted, there's going to be times during the day where it's higher and lower, but on average, you're seeing 15,000 vehicles going up and down Highway 36 on a daily basis past this site. So to put 24 trucks added into 15,000 vehicles running up and down that, they can be running there 24 hours a day. Again, 24 trucks is very, very minor.
Until they hit the loading dock and they start backing up and the calls start coming in. I just want to make sure that we all understand.
Well, let's all understand this is an internal loading dock, not an external one like at Sam's Club. This is a big difference.
No, this
the
one
loading
won't
dock be. Is. The livestock in is
the
in loading
one, yes,
out.
That's
is
correct.
With the reefer,
the outbound one is away from the residential unit. Generally,
the outbound one is on the residential.
Right, and the outbound is really happening during the day. It's not happening in the
and it's closest
at night
to Loomis Road, and it's farthest away from the residential development.
Yeah, I just wanted to add, I appreciate the reefer. I understand that part of it. We do all modern trailers, so, you know, I've watched and seen reefers that are 15, 20, 25 years old, and they definitely get louder, and obviously there's not the same technology in reefers, but we run ours 3 to 4 years, and they swap out. So we do run very modern refrigeration with our trailers.
At no point
are we going to want a trailer sitting overnight in that dock running. There's no benefit to us to have that. So
you got a better refrigerator in the building.
100%.
It's 10:15. Let's keep going. Not worrying about the little stuff.
I won't rehash this completely. Mr. Eddy did a really nice job of kind of explaining what the outside of the building looks like and the different views. You can just even flip to the next one. Again, this is just a view of the main employee entrance. That little close-up on that. The building itself is constructed of insulated metal panels for the most part. The office area, the employee welfare area, that will have decorative architectural metal panels and brick as it's outside. So we believe we've created a very aesthetically pleasing looking facility. We have added some screen walls on that to, as was discussed earlier, to hide generators and transformers and that type of equipment. Again, next, this is just a blow up again of the front entry for the employees and the main entrance. And that view from Highway 36, and then a view going into the truck area for the building. The building itself, I'd like just to take a brief discussion of what this is. Kind of color-coded it into its main areas. So the green area is where the livestock receiving is. The red area is a abattoir or harvest area. There's three brown areas, no pun intended on this, it's for waste treatment. The darker blue is the cooler area for the carcasses. The lighter blue is what's known as the fabrication room, processing area. The purple is shipping docks and loading docks. The yellow is basic support mechanical spaces, and then the orange color is employee welfare and administrative areas.
This area is much improved from what is currently exists in the existing facility. Much more room for each individual employee. I can say this because I took the tour. Much improved in this area and actually in this area. So for those who were concerned about COVID, much better. Much better here. And office space too, for that matter. So that all helps. Alderman Wilhelm.
Could you go over the brown area again and specifically
one? One
the small
one?
One, right? The first small one by itself.
This one?
No, it's one? Tan colored, not gray.
Tan.
Not gray brown.
Tan.
Tan.
This one? Next to the here.
You almost had it.
Almost only comes
that one.
That's also employee welfare area.
Okay.
There's a breakdown of what's kind of known as dirty harvest versus clean harvest. Two different groups of employees work that. We separate that for safety purposes and cleanliness within the building.
I can't really see what those little blocks are right there in the front. I don't know what those are, but
that was just some outdoor seating area for.
No, it's not that area.
Those are lockers.
Okay. I was looking at one area where the trucks come in, and there was a certain grate that was down on the ground, and it looked like it's the name of the grate is made for stormwater. Is that what's in front of the loading dock? It's on like C50 or something.
Honestly, not sure what I'd have to.
Okay.
You're talking on the livestock side?
Yes.
You think you get the back going down and then it's probably at the base?
It could be, yeah, that could just.
There would be.
That would have been just a. Just a drain. Yeah, just a thing to catch water that would actually go into,
right,
into the sanitary side of things.
My thought was when I looked at the drawings, the grate collects everything pretty much that could fall off of there. And I know you have straw in there, but I've been behind vehicles that. Stuff falls out of them, and you're moving cattle in and out, it's not going to be a clean situation. Is there any way to pipe that particular, what might fall off, through your wastewater system? Because right now it goes directly into the stormwater basin.
Yes, that anything actually around that area that would come off the truck, because where it backs in, we would actually have a drains inside that area. That would be pushed all the way into the sanitary side of it and going through
the piping shows directly that it goes directly into the stormwater basin. You might want to check that out because I spent a lot of time looking at it.
Yeah, I would have to double check to see that exact drawing if there was an errant line that was put in there. But no, there's nothing there that we would be putting directly into the stormwater system.
It looks like it's meant for parking, usually parking off.
We'd have a certain amount of drainage inside a parking lot or.
Right.
In there, but I'm going to say that might have just been an errant line or that. We would not have that being drained into the stormwater system.
All right. Well, I want some assurity on that because it's going there.
Okay.
Okay. Next page, just to kind of the wastewater treatment system itself. And again, as Jerry had indicated, currently Strauss does not have a pretreatment system at all. This is a kind of a general diagram of how a wastewater pretreatment system would work. So on the far left-hand side of the diagram, you see incoming processed waste, and that's all waste from inside the building. So every from the harvest floor area, the cattle, the livestock, holding pens, the fabrication area, and the processing area, all the drains inside there, this all funnels into this pretreatment system. Everything goes through what's known as a rotary drum screen. It basically takes and removes larger particles and chunks of fat and that would potentially end up down the drain. And then puts the liquid down into the rest of the system. That goes into the equalization tank. There's an aeration blower that puts air into that equalization tank that helps separate the solids from the liquid. Once it's gone through that, it goes through what's known as a flocculator. There, chemicals are added into the mix that further help separate out any of the heavy particles from the wastewater stream. And then that ultimately goes into a diffused air flotation unit known as a DAF. And what that does, they actually pump more air through that, and as the particles float to the top, the particles are stripped off, and that goes into a sludge tank that's ultimately taken off to further treatment at a sewage treatment plant. Then the rest of that effluent is discharged from the DAF unit, essentially down the sanitary sewer system, which ultimately ends up going through MMSD. Now, the one thing is the equalization tank and the diffused air flotation unit. Those are the two things that basically generate the most smell. Those are actually designed to be fully enclosed with caps on them. And the vent pipes are off of those, come off, and that goes through a odor control unit, which is a two-part air scrubber. And I can get a little bit further into what that specifically is. The wastewater itself, what MMSD looks at are four major things. They look at BODs, which is the biological oxygen demand, total suspended solids, which is TSS, fats, oils, and grease, which is known as FOG or HEM, and pH. Those are the four things that MMSD looks at. We're looking at the current levels prior to any treatment. For the BODs, 900 to 2,000 milligrams per liter. After, it would be down to 315 to 700. The current levels that Strauss is seeing at their current facility is 900, so this would be a 23 to 65% reduction from what Strauss currently is doing. The total suspended solids, we'd expect 300 to 850 milligrams per liter. After treatment, 30 to 85. Current levels are 486. We would be seeing an 82 to 94% reduction. The fats, oils, and grease, 500 to 1,000. After pretreatment, 50 to 100. Current levels are 138. This is a 28 to 63% reduction. In the pH, before pretreatment, the system is designed to handle anything from a pH of 3 to 12. After pretreatment, it wants to be greater than 5. Currently, the current levels are 7.09, which is actually right in line where they want to be on that, so there really is no reduction or change on that. Now, MMSD does set limits for the BODs, the TSS, fats, oils, and grease, and the pH. The two things that the MMSD cares the most about are the fats, oils, and grease, and the pH. Those are the things that they care about. The BODs and the total suspended solids, it's not that they don't care about them. The limits that they set, you can exceed it, and they actually don't care how much you exceed it. You just have to pay a surcharge to do it. So what we're doing, or what you'll see here, is we're going to be well below or at the levels that we need for the fats, oils, and grease, and the pH. The total suspended solids will be well below what MMSD is looking for there. And the only one that we could potentially or be over is on the BODs. And again, that's something that they have no issue taking as much as you put down the proverbial drain. It's just you end up paying a surcharge, whatever that overage is on that. We have reviewed this with MMSD, the basic concept of the plan and what the type of system we're looking at. And in general, they're in agreement with it. However, just like anything else, they need to see the final plans and specifications finalized for this, for them to review. And Strauss needs to apply for their for an actual permit. So ultimately, those things still have to be done. But we've had the initial discussions with MMSD, and they're, and as Jerry said, those discussions started well over a year ago. Sure.
You have had those discussions, but it was on your Century City. It wasn't on this one.
We've had discussions. The concept of the wastewater treatment system and what they would be putting down the drain would have been no different if this was in Century City, here, or, you know, anywhere.
I know, but it's just a little bit, you know, not quite 100% that you're actually working, because we don't have a... you haven't had a communication with them on this particular site.
Actually, I have.
Okay.
I have.
I'm just going by what the DNR just sent me today, and
that's
they apparently
true,
were talking with them. So,
because I've had conversations, and they're well aware of this facility.
Yeah.
They're well aware of the facility, but they haven't had any. It's right here. I can share it later, but.
No, I mean, I'm not.
Careful.
I've had conversations to have the basic, initial. Again, we had deeper conversations with them a year ago at Century City. That is true. We've had subsequent conversations with them, actually just within the last week, to discuss, to go over some of these specific things, specific to their actual levels of what we're looking at ultimately designing the system for. Again, as I said, the final design of the system, along with that application, still has to be applied for, and they have to do their final review. But we have had initial conversations with them, and I'd be happy to show you the emails that show that we have.
I'm happy to show you my email as well.
On the odor control, there are basically three areas that have the potential to create odor. One is the livestock receiving and the cattle pen area. The other is the wastewater treatment room, which we just talked about, the trash room and the waste product room, the abattoir area or harvest room, and then there's a processing byproduct room that comes off of the processing area, fabrication area. And I'll start with that. That's the easiest. It's that small area. It's fully enclosed, and it's refrigerated. So, and as we discussed earlier, by refrigerating that, we've essentially eliminated the chance for odors. Again, it's fully enclosed, and because it is refrigerated, it's not ventilated with any outside air. So that the only time that door gets open is when that trailer gets pulled out, and that's going to happen probably once every couple of days, if that. Heading back the other direction, the abattoir area or the harvest floor. This area actually doesn't produce that much odor, and I believe one of the other aldermen had indicated that it smelled kind of the equivalent of going to the butcher area. So this area, what we're doing is we're ventilating this with 60,000 CFM of outside air. And from a code standpoint, this is 60 times more than what code would require for this kind of space, for ventilation air. And the one thing is this is it's a single pass. So the air, 60,000 CFM of air, comes in essentially on the north side. It passes through that space, and it is exhausted at the roof level on the south side of that room. That air does not mix with or be recirculated into that space at all. It is, again, a single pass. There's twofold what this does. One, that area itself, from a temperature standpoint, is ambient. It's not cooled. So that large volume of air does two things. It helps make that comfortable for the workers. It also, from a single pass standpoint, We don't have air that's recirculating and have a potential that can be contaminated. It goes through and it's exhausted immediately. And because we're using such a large volume of air, and since there's so little potential smell in that area, any odor that could happen is easily dissipated on that. The cattle area itself for the livestock receiving, again, this is fully enclosed. It's ventilated with up to 150,000 CFM of outside air during the summer. And again, this is also a single pass. So the air is not recirculated. It doesn't sit in there a very long time to pick up a lot of smells. However, because of cattle being in the air, in there waiting to be processed, there is going to be urine and manure that's produced. The barn area itself is kept clean throughout the day. On that, at the night, it's completely washed. It's completely washed down. What we're doing is, again, we're putting a large volume of air through there, and then as that air is exiting that space, we have ozone generators put on those exhaust fans to eliminate any odor leaving the barn that could be generated in there. The waste product room, again, that area is also fully... Oh, I'm sorry.
Alderman Hammond.
Thank you. And if I may stop you for just a moment there.
Sure.
The fans that are blowing through that livestock receiving area, as you say, it's a one pass. Can you tell me a little more about the size of those fans and if there will be a discernible kind of whirling drone that anyone in the area would be able to hear, say, in the nearby residential areas?
Sure. I mean, generally, you would see from a decibel rating probably a fan if you're standing right next to it. You'd probably be in the 80 to 85 decibel range. We can get that. We can get very specific and find out exactly, depending on the manufacturer, what is. But I would, based on previous jobs and what the fans are normally sized for sound, you're right around 85 decibels. That decibel rating will drop significantly the farther you get away from it. We can do calculations to determine what the decibel rating is by the time you get to the property line. But generally, by the time you get to the property line, you're back down to ambient decibel ratings in the area, which is probably going to be more in about the mid 50 to 60 decibel ratings of what you'd have. So if you put a decibel meter in here in this room right now and set it out, it's probably going to be reading right around 50 decibels. So you're really not going to hear, once you get out to the property line, you will not hear those fans.
If I may, decibel levels are a frequent topic of conversation for this council, for other areas and developments that are in the community. And we all take calls and comments about those. And there seems to be disagreement at different points in time, given the winds or how much humidity is in the air. So that is something I would like to see a little bit more information on, and I think that there should be some limits applied, and that we all understand what sound level would be expected or allowed or appropriate to be emitted from those fans. And I don't know if that's something we can determine here at 10:30 at night, but I think that is getting to the heart of something that many residents are very, very afraid of.
52 dB. Your conversation was 52 dB average. Could. Who's going to go measure it? I'll say that again loudly. Alderwoman Hanneman's conversation averaged 52 dB. Can go as low as 46 and as high as 58, if anybody cares.
Okay. Just to wrap up this, the waste product room, again, that's fully enclosed. It's fitted with ozone generators. They remove 99% of any odors that are generated in that space. That space itself is only going to be ventilated with about 500 CFM of air, and that's only just to eliminate buildup of heat inside that room. And that's pretty much only going to happen during the summertime. But 500 CFM is, again, a very, very small amount of air that we're ventilating out of that. And the ozone generator should take care of all the smell on that. The trash room is, that's fully enclosed. It actually is refrigerated. So refrigeration should eliminate the odors and that coming from that space. And the wastewater treatment room, which I described a little bit earlier, the two parts to make the most, potential for odor generating in there are the equalization tank and the DAF unit. Those both have lids on it. Those are, both units are then vented through an air scrubber. It's a two-stage oxidizing air scrubber that uses chlorine dioxide and a countervalent technology. And if you want to get more into the detail of that, we can, but probably not at this point in time. Ultimately, the big thing that creates odor is hydrogen sulfide, or H2S, and that's really what we're trying to eliminate the smell of. And again, the ozone generators and the air scrubbers will take care of 99%+ of anything that generates any odor from that. Lastly, I know that there's a concern about ammonia, and a couple things. The refrigeration system that is being planned on using uses anhydrous ammonia as a refrigerant for for the refrigeration system. And anhydrous ammonia contains no water, so it has there's an affinity for water. It likes water. It's kind of actually looking for it. Ammonia is used because it's natural, it's highly efficient, it's economical. It has no global warming or ozone depletion potential, and it has been used as a refrigerant since 1850. Ammonia is considered flammable. It concentrations of 16% to 25%. However, you need a ignition source of above 1560 degrees to ignite it. So the actual chances for fire with ammonia are quite low. If it does, if there is an explosion or fire with it, usually that is happening because of somebody's got a torch next to a pipe or something like that, and they haven't taken care of it properly.
Excuse me. Is that what happens when fertilizer plants blow up? Because that's the same product.
Correct. Anhydrous ammonia is used in fertilizer, but generally it's I don't have the exact knowledge of what would cause the explosions there.
Explosions.
So I really wouldn't want to answer that because I just don't have the knowledge.
Those are usually dust explosions.
Pardon?
Those are dust explosions, mostly, aren't they?
Could be. I mean, again, in a ammonia, for fertilizer, there's also a lot of things that can. Sometimes they mix as well, but again, I don't have the knowledge, so I really can't answer that question.
Fertilizer plants are usually dust explosions. There was the one in this West Texas that was quite large. I think they were storing large amounts of solid, like a pellet form of fertilizer, and that's a different situation. Usually ammonia, you hear about ammonia exploding when it's mixed with like fuel oil, like ammonium nitrate.
Mm-hmm.
But ammonia on its own it has explosive properties under some conditions, but not likely in this setting.
Well, since we're on this topic, which was one of the points I wanted to talk about, I have a close relative that actually does work with this product, and we've talked about it quite a bit. And he says, well, it comes in as liquid, which means it's trucked in as liquid, and the system loses over time, so you have to eventually add more liquid. So it's not like it's just a one-time delivery. It comes in occasionally. And then he said the way it works is it's sent through a series of compressors, like your car air conditioner has a compressor, and it's a liquid sent to a compressor, turned to a gas, turned to another compressor, turned to a gas, and that's what creates the cold and the refrigeration of it. He said it's not necessarily the liquid, unless it's being trucked in, that's the problem. He said it's the escaping gas, and he called it a moisture scavenger, as you said, It is anhydrous, so it's...
Yes. Let's do this.
What?
You got expert here. Let's let the expert talk
I
about
have
it.
Expert from a family member who works
but
in the industry.
Yours is hearsay,
so
his is direct. So mine let's use the direct.
You know what?
Alderwoman, we got the direct expert here. Let's let him do that. Last meeting, I was told that I wasn't an expert, even though I was. So let's let the expert do it.
Well,
I'd like to say
that...
Mr. Olson, go ahead.
I spoke
with... Mr. Olson, go ahead.
I'm being cut off.
Again, let me. I'll finish this, and we can go from there. I mean, again.
Enough. Right. I run the meeting, not you guys. Mr. Olson
right.
is the floor.
Okay. Ammonia is considered caustic, and that's probably the bigger issue than really the fire side of things. And it is dangerous at high levels of exposure. There's no kidding about that. Exposure above 300 parts per million, and again, now that we are talking about not liquid, we're talking about gas in the air, is hazardous. Exposure at 130 parts per million is acceptable for up to about 8 hours. At 50 parts per million, it's considered no injury for prolonged or repeated exposure. The one thing ammonia has is a very low odor threshold, so people can actually smell it at 20 parts per million. So usually it kind of acts as its own early warning system. If somebody starts to can smell ammonia, you know, it's something that they know they need to check and look at right away. And just to try and give you an idea of again how many ammonia systems there are in the United States, there are currently over 10,000 facilities in the United States that use industrial ammonia refrigeration systems. Wisconsin alone has over 250 of them. Illinois and Iowa each have over 1,000. Between the years of 2005 and 2019, there were a total of 396 ammonia-related incidents at these facilities. That equates to a yearly accident rate of 0.28% for the industry. Strauss is going to implement all required EPA requirements for process safety management for the building and the system. The building will be fitted with ammonia systems throughout the building to detect any signs or problems of any leakage, and to protect, you know, it's not only just to protect the workers, it's also to protect the product. If the product